WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
If you still believe the camera doesn't lie, you haven't heard about electronic imaging. It's a process that uses a computer to alter photographs easily and virtually undetectably. My guest, Fred Richin, has written a book about the implications of this new technology called In Our Own Image. A photojournalist and the director of photography at the New York Times Magazine, he's disturbed by the potential for abuse of the technology, and he's concerned that we may no longer look at the photograph as an indisputable record of events. The book is subtitled The Coming Revolution in Photography, but Richin told me the process has already been used, even by reputable news magazines.
A couple of years ago, Newsweek magazine published a photograph that purported to show Dustin Hoffman and Tom Cruise, two buddies from Rain Man, together laughing. And the point of the text was that a film that's about an autistic man and his brother would normally not be a Hollywood success, but because the chemistry of the two stars was so great, that was a major reason why it worked. And one did not know that one man was standing in Hawaii, Tom Cruise, and Dustin Hoffman was in New York, and they were photographed several days apart, and they just put together the photograph for publication in Newsweek magazine as their lead photograph. They did not tell the reader anything, and one was left with the impression that these two guys were standing in the same room having a great time together. If a writer did that, if a reporter stated that two people were in the same room, and they were not, that reporter would probably lose their job for not being a good journalist. So these episodes in photography happen much more often, or happen with some frequency, and I think in part it's because the photography is not taken as seriously in the mass media as the text. The sort of first major example was in National Geographic almost 10 years ago, where they had a horizontal photograph of the pyramids of Giza in Egypt with some camels going by, and they wanted a vertical for the cover. So what they did was they rotated the pyramids so one was almost behind the other instead of next to each other, and they published it as a vertical. When it was mentioned at a public lecture that that's what they did, there was a lot of concern, and particularly in the photographic community. And I did some interviews at that point, and the picture editor was very much against it. He said it was like limited nuclear warfare. There ain't none. You know, once you start manipulating, you really can lead yourself into some major problems. And the editor of the publication at the time felt that there was really nothing wrong with it. It was kind of like retroactively repositioning the photographer a few feet to one side, which to me is an extraordinary concept, that photography is not the privileged meeting of a photographer with the subject at that fraction of a second, but anywhere in the future you can change the past. It's sort of like the decisive moment happens any time, not at the time of making the photograph.
But it's been possible to alter photographs for years. You even give the example of an 1840 photograph called Self-Portrait as a Drowned Man by Hippolyte Bayard.
Right.
How is the new technology different from what we've become used to seeing, little airbrushes and touch-ups?
Well, one thing is that for major publications now, they depend upon computer systems to do the page makeup, to see if the photographs fit, the text fits, and then to send it to press. So you could send it to satellite press stations all over the country or all over the world by wire, as opposed to having to send packages or whatever. So they use it all the time. Once something, a photograph, is in digital form, it's very easy then to retouch it. It takes seconds or minutes, and you see immediately what you've done, and you could retouch it with extraordinary precision or in major ways. You could change the sky color, you could extend the sky so there's more sky, what I call a kind of a reverse cropping. You extend the image instead of decreasing the image. And you could do all these things so easily, and once it's in that format, you look at it and you say, wow, that sky's a little too red, I'd like it bluer, and a few seconds later, it's just the way you want it. In the old days, first of all, you would not have the temptation to do it, because you would have to go out of your way to do it. You would have to say to a retoucher, could you please retouch this thing? You know, I need this person taken out, or I need this to happen. And particularly in color, it would be a very time-consuming and expensive process that may take several days to do. And you wouldn't see until the end what you're going to get. So it's a magnitude change. It's not that it wasn't ever done before. It's just that it's being done with more frequency, more precision, more often, in more kinds of publications.
What are some of the new ethical considerations that that kind of technology raises?
Well, to me, it's the Tiananmen Square question. It's like the Chinese government said there was no massacre. And if an eyewitness said, yes, there was a massacre, the question would be, do you believe the word of the government or do you believe the word of the person? And since the Chinese government is quite powerful, you would probably end up saying the government is right and the person is wrong. But when you can show a photograph, you could say, look, the photograph proves it. The photograph, in fact, won against the Chinese government. We know that a massacre took place. We disbelieve the assertion of the Chinese government because of this little rectangle piece of paper. It's one of the only forms that across cultures, within cultures, we tend to believe even against the word of major governments. And I think that in this age of increasing chaos and uncertainty and disbelief cross-culturally and disbelief in governments, that that's an extraordinarily important function, that an eyewitness cannot provide just one person's word against a government's word. Once you create an environment in which people say it's okay to retouch photographs, you know, the camera never lies, that kind of mythology is so depreciated to the point that people disbelieve all photographs, even the ones that were representing what in fact happened. Recently in Norway, there was a vote by the Journalists Association to put the letter M, signifying montage, next to any computer-manipulated image that was substantially changed. So the reader knows at least something was changed in this image, which means that the other image, without the M, nothing was changed. Of course, you don't know what the letter M, which part of the image was changed, you know, whether it was something significant or less significant, but at least it's a step in saying to the reader, just like you do in text, you say, this is an editorial. Don't take it as a news article. If it's a news article, we'll tell you if it's a news article. If it's a novel, we'll tell you it's a novel. In photography, there are no signifiers for that in publications. You don't know whether the photograph itself was meant to be taken seriously, less seriously, because these are things made up by editors, and they don't tell the reader, in fact, the way they're thinking.
Well, how do you propose to guard against that? Do you just ban the use of image enhancement by computer in news publications?
Well, I think, first of all, you have to start to take photography seriously and ask yourself, what is photography really about? We all know that it lies. We all know that it's an interpretation. We all know that there's subjectivity, that there's no, you know, absolute objectivity in any photograph. So we start with that basis. Then I think what we have to say is that photography is generally being used in any case in the media or often being used as an illustration of a preconceived point. If you look at the photography being published with or without computers, it's highly formulaic, it's highly illustrative at this point. You rarely see, for example, the photo essay that Life magazine made famous in the 1950s. You rarely see 6 or 8 pages in which a photographer tries to get at the root of the problem. So in that environment in which photography is being used to illustrate a point as opposed to explore what's going on, the computer, of course, is wonderful. If all you're trying to do is illustrate a point, then just change around a few elements, you illustrate it even better. You're not allowing the photographer to explore what's happening, which is exactly, for example, what's happening in the Persian Gulf. You're not allowing photographers to explore what's happening. All we're getting is formulaic, preconceived images that make a point which the authorities want made. If you allow the photographer to explore, allow that kind of photography to be published, you don't need the computer, because what you're asking for is what somebody's finding out, not what somebody's whipping up to be what they always wanted it to prove. So that's important. And then if you're going to use the computer to manipulate, I think the publications have to have a statement that the food pages, for example, you know, are computer-manipulated imagery. That, in fact, this is not what the dinner would look like if we cooked it, but only because we changed the colors on the eggplant and this and that and the other, and don't expect it yourself to get a dinner coming out that way. And I think once you make those kinds of distinctions, the reader knows in which ballpark they are, whether they're looking in terms of news photography, which would not be manipulated, or food photography, which might be manipulated, and you're making those kinds of distinctions, which I think are long overdue.
More with photographer Fred Richin in 60 seconds. This is Fresh Air. We now continue our interview with Fred Richin, author of In Our Own Image, a book about the computer manipulation of photographs. You mentioned the Gulf as an example of a place where a government might have a strong motive to want to deceive, in this case, by not allowing photographers to photograph it. But with this technology, it's also possible that they could produce their own photographs and try to pass them off as a true representation of events, even if they've been altered. Are there any safeguards against that type of use of electronic imaging?
The same safeguards we have with writing. You believe your source. That's the only safeguard there is, because basically it's undetectable if somebody does it. If a writer says to you, X thing happened, you believe your writer. You believe your source. If it's a writer you don't know, a reporter you don't know, you want perhaps a corroboration by somebody else who is there. It's the same now with a photographer. It's the same now with providers of images.
My murder mysteries fan mind is thinking that a criminal suspect could also fake an alibi using this technology. Could new tests be developed for photographic evidence?
Well, the question is, in court cases, you know, accident pictures, satellite verifications of treaties, all these kinds of uses of photography, all of them can be manipulated and undetectably so. From what I understand from people in the computer field, that basically any manipulation you make, you can test for it, but you can generally deceive the test. It's virtually impossible to find out if something has been manipulated. The way we traditionally did it was by asking for the negative, saying, okay, here's a print, but let's see the negative and see if you retouched the print. Now, however, we have the new still video cameras that have come out, which are with a magnetic disc, and they're made to be reused, and there's no negative. It's just a little, you know, disc, like a computer disc, that you put into a machine and you see it on your TV set, the images, and they're made to be reused. So 10 years from now, you say, where's the negative? The person says, I'm sorry, I did it on a magnetic disc and I reused it. There's no negative. So there's no proof in the archival sense that we're used to, and that, too, makes things much more complicated and insecure. So my sense is that we're more or less at the beginning of this revolution. It's already occurred, it's happening, it's out there, but now is exactly the time to begin to ask ourselves, what are our safeguards for this? Do we have to, for example, in magazines, photographers get these tiny credits usually that go up the side of the picture. Do we have to think of them more as the author of the image, somebody trustworthy that we can rely upon, as opposed to indistinguishable, just the way we do with a reporter? We consider them the author. Not just anybody wrote it, somebody wrote it. The same with the photograph. We have to begin to do at least things like that.
Well, thank you very much for talking to us.
I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Fred Richin is the director of photography at the New York Times Magazine and the author of In Our Own Image, The Coming Revolution in Photography.